Viterbo, of the Viterbo Valley. Oh, so I don't think that is a big problem.
Yeah, and also Yuta said, although we make big deal about this, usually so, doesn't
so,
affect.
So in the GSI, they use like a monthly surface field for the, whereas in the Nature Run, it's a year.
In the GSI, they get surface type and vegetation from flux data that's produced by model.
Oh.
Then in NSF, what they do is the guy in across the street and the land surface modeling group, they read fixed file from climatology and put into flux file somewhere in the process. So this is still not clear.
So I want to make sure, sir. What do you say is that in GSA, they use I fixed the surface, right? Emissivity. I mean, for the surface emissivity, they use a fixed emissivity or? The
surface emissivity is produced by CRTM.
That's right.
But depend on surface type. But the GSA model provide the surface type and the vegetation, right? Then, according to this, CRTM
produce
for surface emissivity.
In the GSI, I mean, in the model used for the data simulation system, usually is doing this way. They provide the seasonal variation of vegetation. Vegetation type,
that's
including
the NSF has fixed file, that's seasonal variable.
Yes.
So that's 12
fields. Or 4 months, but four seasons.
But that is, they don't use the way it is. People across the street just touch that one. That
chemical.
They do the interpolation to the time, and they, I don't know if they do linearly or sine cosine. I don't know. And also they might touch something. I don't know what they do it, but they change.
Yeah.
Then they give to the model. So GSI picks up from flux file, and somewhere in the process, in a GSI cycle, that whatever chemical group produced is red, but couldn't.
That one really affected the computation of the emissivity in the CRTI.
Yeah. So what we can do is just to use. Climate, and we can just interpretation ourselves. If we can get from Jesse Mann, we have to get information from Jesse Mann how they do the interpretation.
Oh.
It may be easy enough to produce whatever in the GSI, whatever in the model, because I don't think land type and these things will change. So we can just use NSF analysis. To extract that information from NSF analysis, we have to go through the old flux file for whole year. That's going to be a huge amount of work. On the other hand, climate data in fixed file for the vegetation type and just one tiny file. So I think we can just interpret, rough interpret.
And it won't have too much of an impact.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
We don't want to do huge effort for the
on a thing. Global scale, right?
Yeah.
It's not a global scale. It's not.
So that's how we are thinking. So does that make sense to you?
So
there,
good.
Yeah.
That's so good to me.
So maybe we should generate our interpreted vegetation. What do you need for the to compute surface emissivity? Vegetation and the
Vegetation type. It's in the GFS. They have both a soil type and a vegetation type.
Yeah.
Whereas the CRTM, which uses I think the MESDIS surface stuff, it's only got one field for the surface, and it's just the vegetation So it doesn't take into account what the soil type is. So it'll be like broadleaf forest, for instance, or grassland, or something like that, whereas GFS says the soil type is sandy loam, and this, you know, the vegetation is, you know, brush leaf or something like that.
Do you consider roughness, surface roughness?
That's
sort of associated with the vegetation type.
Yeah, I don't think that's yeah, I think for the CRTM, the vegetation type is, well, I mean, that's all it is. It's just a, well, it's a surface, it's called a surface type, but it's really just a vegetation. Yeah. It's not both the soil and the...
So, it might be worthwhile to produce our standard, for our OSE, we need to produce annual cycle, common vegetation type and soil type and these things, for
The PEB should be some kind of consistency.
Yes.
Or you can use it.
Just interpolation. We can do once and everybody uses. Yeah. That may be worthwhile to it. I print out from the Japanese side. Tone and Japanese, but I don't know what happened.
Maybe the traffic.
Yeah.
it's not a good day.
So what I'm worrying about is Ron Errico is leading the simulation radiation effort, and I tried to meet today. This is the day probably only time he might be able to make it, because he had the operation right next week.
Yes.
And after that.
But after that, he planned to come back to work 4 days after surgery.
Yeah.
He actually worked hard in the last several days in the hospital.
So this week her daughter had surgery, and next week he had surgery.
Oh.
So her daughter's surgery is Monday, so he...
was Monday.
Yeah, so maybe if we can discuss, and I'm recording for him.
Oh.
So I'll give it to him, and he can listen in a bag or something. So if we have some question to him, we can... speak to the microphone. I can put the microphone in the middle, and so he won't be left out. So he proposed some kind of his web cloud clearing algorithm. You were there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that seems to be a good idea, but then we have to develop that function. He showed in a meeting function. So his idea is if there is something like 50% cloudiness in one place, he just run the random number. Then if it fits into some less than 50, if random number came out to 0.7, so they simulate clear sky radiance. If it's come out like less than 0.7, then discard that one. So in his method, even if there's a cloud, we can still get some kind of clear sky radiance. So all the data simulated are clear sky data.
So like within the footprint, you're saying if there's a fraction, depending on the fraction of the clouds, he does some statistical routine to figure out how much of that footprint is going to actually get incorporated.
Yeah, that's right. So, algorithm may not be simple, but how to define that function, cloudiness, but how much, if the 50% cloudiness, are we going to pass 50% of the data or 30% or 70%? That kind of function have to be generated for the each radiance group. So that requires some research. So my proposal is to maybe Runfa can spend some time for that research and concentrate on just a few days, the very good data set. Then for the time being, we just to do a little bit quick job to make sure all other things are working. Yeah, all other things, but just to, all the cycle will run correctly.
Oh, okay, so she's going to analyze the algorithm to see how well it's actually differentiating between cloudy and clear.
Yeah,
we just start with IR, the HERS. I'm working on HERS, and then sooner move to the ALS.
Yes, and other thing is, other things we thought about is looking at the ratio between, we simulate both cloudy radiance and clear radiance, so use that difference as an indicator. Then if you do that, I don't know how to use it, then we don't, we cannot take in account that porosity. Porosity means that each grid point we come up with the answer yes or no. But the previous method, even within the one grid point, 50% of a chance of a yes, 50% of a chance of a no, or some kind, even if it's a very cloudy area, there is a chance to get through the clear sky radiance. But if you use the ratio between cloudy radiance and clear radiance, we can get only one number.
My understanding is this. The problem is within the one grid box from nature run, the footprint of observation can be more than 10. So if the nature run said I have a 10% cloud, or 20, let's give an extremely number, 90% cloud cover, that means about 10% you still have a clear readings. So that's what Ron said, that the probability based on the one nature Ron information. So my understanding is that. So what's the ratio you want?
I think we will also want to use that to detecting the cloudy area, we want to use that to clear sky radiance and cloudy sky radiance, difference between that one.
Okay. You mean without just assume nature run is what the truth, then put it into CRTM and then generate readings. Is that what you mean? I do not follow.
I'm not sure.
So the CRTM probably would get the input data going into the CRTM would be not, there would be no clouds.
That's right.
But if you get a certain difference between what the satellite measures and what the CRTM simulates with no cloud, then you throw it out. Is that right?
I didn't.
Why?
Yeah, we discussed the last time, but
I did not follow. Can you say?
It may be just I'm not understanding. I think it's more of just I was just trying to understand.
I tried to understand it too.
I was just saying that. Are you saying the CRTM gets gets a profile of data, but it doesn't get any cloud information? The data that it receives is assumed to be cloud-free.
Yes.
So the CRTM simulates a clear sky radiance.
Yeah.
Or it thinks it's a clear sky, but then the measurement actually measures enough of a difference because there actually are clouds there.
We do not compare compare with the real data. I think that's what he said.
Yeah.
We do not compare with the real data at each individual problem.
First of all, and one thing, and we are trying to explain the Lorentz method, and what we think is if we simulate cloudy radiance data using CRTM, cloudy radiance is still very, we don't know what's going on. We are in under development, right?
Right, but I mean, if you input, you know, cloud information into the CRTM, then you already know it's cloudy, though, right? If it's
you know something.
And GSI assimilate, GSI, when they read the data, and they detect if it's usable or not, and make sure this is clear or cloudy. If they think it's cloudy, just throw away. And if they think it's reasonably good, they assimilate as a clear sky radiance, right? So when they call CRTM from GSI, they don't use cloud information right now. Maybe later on, but not yet.
Well, okay. But the question is, if the CRTM did have cloud information
when it created
the radiance profile.
Right. If it did have it, then
if it did have it, you know, how realistic is that?
Oh, that's a question. Yeah.
And because, I mean, if it would realistically create, well, you know, presumably if it was very realistic, they would just use it in the GSI.
Right. Actually, I'm in the process of
or not
looking into that.
Yeah.
So I can't say that's actually a project I'm working on. So
yeah.
I don't know.
So it's under research.
Under
right?
research. Yeah.
So right now it's treated as a clear sky radiance. So if we generate cloudy radiance, that will already have a big error put into simulated data. So
but then the GSI quality control would deal with it, no?
Well, quality control deal with this, and if it's lots of cloud, it's get rid of it. If it's a little bit of cloud,
the
treat as clear radiance.
Yeah.
So that will be an error.
But that's but that's the way it works in real life.
But in real life, for Ron, and I agree with Ron,
real life is real life.
Wait,
we can all agree on that.
Right? Ron's strategy is produced data which has best, which produce best possible data. Then we start working on error. The best possible data for us is radiance data has to be simulated as clear sky radiance because GSI assimilate as a clear sky radiance. Then we can start adding moisture the next step is adding the cloudy radiance. But the first thing is the clear sky radiance.
Right.
Even if there is a cloudy. So if the 50% of the cloud, if there's 10 footprint, we can just produce 5 clear sky radiance and discard 5.
Oh.
That's
something like what the algorithm does, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
The problem, you know, the rub is, of course, that different channels actually look at different parts and are affected differently by different clouds.
Yeah.
So it's really not that simple.
Yes, that's right. Then, well, so probably that's what Runhao and so if we wait for that research and wait, it's going to take. Runhao is very smart and she can work very fast, but he doesn't have a superwoman shirt.
But you just, in terms of the clouds, you just want to use the CRTM just as like a screening tool. You don't want to actually assimilate the clouds, right? You just want to differentiate between clear and
cloud. No, what we want is to create a set of data that mimics the real world.
Yeah.
We have a background, right? A gridded real world.
Yeah.
Gridded real world. Mm-hmm. And we want to use something like something in the CRTM or like the CRTM to mimic the kind of measurements we would get as if it was a real world and there was a satellite up there looking down and getting it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you actually want
to. Yeah.
Okay.
So how do we do that? See, that's the question. I mean, the simplistic idea is, well, if the CRTM can include cloud effects and we have cloud information in our gridded real world, then why not just let it make cloud affected soundings and let the GSI sort it out?
Yeah, the trouble is that cloud effect is he's still working on. So that will change every day, right?
Yeah, that's still a work, it's a work in progress.
Well, there's some more than others. Some have cloud effects more mature than others. For instance, Tom Zhu was using cloud effects, cloud liquid water, cloud ice, cloud and humidity and cloud fraction information in the CRTM he was using, which is what, SARDA or something?
No, she
he was using an RTM.
Arbito.
No, it wasn't RT Tops, it was SARDA.
Optra.
Whatever.
He
but in any case, it was including moisture information in simulating radiances.
Yeah, but that picture, that Tonju's presentation is good enough to produce pretty pictures. So that's different from what Dave is trying to do.
Well, how do you know? How do you know what how do you know how good it is? What have you done to check it out?
So I think that.
Other than look at the pretty pictures.
I think you do something more. David has to do something more than producing pretty pictures.
Yeah, I'm comparing the LBL DIS, which is a high resolution model for clouds scattering, and I'm comparing that with the CRTM to kind of validate it, and that's a project I'm working on. It's done automatically for the gas absorption. It's done automatically when the coefficients are generated.
Right.
So it's kind of analogous to that. Except that in this case, they're independent calculations, whereas the LBL versus CRTM calculations are kind of dependent because we do the regression to get the,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Can you see this
but
one? This one.
In terms of what we want to get to, which is a set of realistic, satellite soundings.
So this is Tonju produced from GOES.
Are these the pretty pictures?
Yeah, I'm trying to show pretty pictures.
Oh.
So maybe you might be interested in because that you they use.
They're not just pretty pictures. I mean, he made those pictures from the soundings that he created from his RTM using this gridded background real world.
I think he used CRTM, so it means whatever.
Well, he should speak to what he used. But I thought I heard him say he used something called SARDA or something, which I really don't know what it is.
SARDA is the RTM model from the UMBC.
Okay. Oh, Larrabee Strode
and
them. Okay, I see.
So you put the SARDA in CRT?
No. But I just, it's on the list of things that we're
right, and I believe that's what he used to make these. And they includes the, included parameters of moisture.
Oh.
But SARDA
cloud ice and cloud water.
It's just for gas. Yeah, that's just a gas. So.
Yeah.
But
I didn't realize that. I thought, I got a code from him. I thought that's the only option.
Yeah.
Don't ask me, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right now it's only Optra in the CRTM.
Yeah.
SARDA is only for the airs?
No, it
can be used for other things.
It can be used, but
yeah, just on that what you said. It's just you use different like coefficient effect, you can simulate different instruments. So it's
that's only for absorption.
This is moisture.
Seven. Because you can use a Lambanan model
and then 12
calculator as a meter dirty window. But you convolute with the different instruments, spectrum is function. And you get training it. And you get a different coefficient
for
different instruments.
Water.
Okay. When you run the model, you choose different instruments. You choose different coefficient file. You consider different
So other thing is, last time we discussed about simulating both clear and clear sky radiance and cloudy radiance for all the grid points, to use that ratio to check the cloud. One is we can simulate everywhere cloudy radiance and clear sky radiance. So that ratio is used for, can be used to detect the cloud.
In my case, only simulated the clear.
Now, we talked about, when Ron was here, the last meeting we had, we talked about getting a look at what the CRTM, or any particular RTM, does with moisture information in terms of making the cloud affected radiances. So we said, okay, well, we'll put moisture information in, generate, simulate radiances that way, do the same thing with no moisture information, and compare the two, and see what kind of differences we're looking at, and see if they're the kind of differences you'd expect to see.
So
with cloud effects.
Yeah. So,
that's evaluating the RTM for some particular RTM.
And
kind of like what you're doing.
And also that you can use to detect that clean enough area instead of using TCC, MCC, or that kind of things. And you can use that ratio as.
So which one you use? So specific humidity? That's the one you like to
Well, there's cloud water and cloud water, cloud ice. Cloud fraction, you know, at
I
every level.
Cloud,
and then there's, you know, at 91 levels, there's a cloud fraction. Also at, you know, low cloud, high cloud, middle cloud fraction.
Yeah, we use that, actually.
There's all that information in there.
So if you use that one for the clear enough area, then you have to interpret that ratio into how much percentage. If the ratio is bigger than this, you produce 10% of data. Or if you
You can actually look at the connection between the difference in the brightness temperature and
cloud.
The cloudy the cloud
that
fraction
kind
or something.
Of, yeah. So you generate both cloudy radiance and clear.
Yeah,
radiance.
I mean all we need to ultimately what we need is a set of realistic, cloud affected radiance. And how to get that is what we're really talking about.
Yeah.
What's the most straightforward way? We've talked about, 5 or 6 different methods.
Right. I guess the one of the first issues is just making sure the right data would be, if you're going to use the CRTM, the right data we use, the effective radius, the cloud water content, those are the main things.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that is, if we throw in model value to the CRTM, within the CRTM, effective radius generated within the CRTM or outside the CRTM?
No, outside the CRTM. That's input data.
Yeah. So we have to do this out before.
Right.
You run the
cloud? I'm still looking at the data, just to process the JAX data.
Yeah. So from JAX data, medium JAX data, so
it's really Eric's data. It's not really my data.
Well.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's true. But Eric is just one of the model. Someone produced the model.
That's true.
I need the alpha format. Where can I have alpha format? I need the buffer table for the errors.
You mean to make the buffer data?
Yeah, it's.
I was thinking that, you can read those files I gave you, right?
But, for my output.
Right, but I was thinking for your output, you could just write a binary file, too. That
had
the buffer, the registration information, the laps, months, satellite type, all that stuff, followed by the radiance.
Okay.
And I could just take that and put it into buffer.
Okay, that's
See, I thought I'd be...
Yeah, trouble is when you produce buffer data, something's missing.
No, it doesn't matter. We could get it working, but I would just assume we all work on the software we're familiar with, that's all.
Yeah.
If you can just write your results out in binary, I can take them and make buffer form. Then I can, then any little problems, you know, they're contained.
So once you start running, maybe you can give it to Hybin, so we don't have to generate
big data. Once we get everything all worked out, we can share all the software, but
yeah, that's right.
You know, we have to develop it first.
Otherwise, we duplicate so many.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, you know, I take your output, I'll write a program that works, makes buffer, and give it back to you, and then we should be all, you know, tickety-boo.
Yeah. That's all.
So, what we are trying to do is, we are trying to, we interpret all the nature run data, nature run T511, T799, it's a huge data set. Jack Knoll is very good at handling all that big data set. So he generate that 91 level as well, 91 level profile over each footprint.
See, I take all the information from the nature run that at every sounding, at every footprint, I just encapsulate the nature run at every footprint. Okay, so that all the information available in this 91 level model, you know, with eight upper air quantities at 91 levels plus 60 surface variables, et cetera, et cetera. Every one of those at every satellite footprint, I just give you the interpolated values in time and space of all the whole background.
Oh, okay.
So right.
So everything available is there at every footprint.
So you interpolate the footprint.
Yes, in space and time.
And he also include the geometry.
And the geometry of the satellite.
Oh, okay.
The angles and whatnot.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing about that. The geometry things, what you provide is the geometry, source, angle. But what you provide.
What I provide is everything that's in the data, everything that's in the observation file.
So whatever
you need that isn't there, you need to be able to generate from that information.
Okay.
Because that's what the GSI does.
Yeah, so that's why I asked Quan Hua how to, based on the solar zenith angle and also the sensor zenith angle, to derive the local zenith angle. So Quan Hua told me that in my case, because I only look at the IR, Hertz IR, he said you just assume that it's zero. Because I look at the GSI code, there are some additional information like the sensor scan position, which I do not have that. I don't know where to get it. So I just let you know that in my case, I have this approximation. I need use a narrow as an approximation for the local zenith angle.
Yeah, well, you compute that, you know, from the, it's the angle that the scan position is at, looking at from the satellite, where it hits the Earth, and where, you know, there's some geometry you have to do to get that. That's
I suppose the Earth is just your prefecture. It's not bad,
it's just a couple signs of cosine. Yeah. It's really not much.
Because seeing the radius just keeps the same. You can use the satellite high.
Okay. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is, so I did look at the GSI code, how they compute the local zenith angle. So then I found there is some more information like the scan position and so on. So there is only one information I cannot get. So that's why I back to the next piece of Quan Hua. Just I'd like to know, in my case, seems like I need to do additional approximation.
Right.
Yeah.
So this geometry is outside of the CRTM. It has to be handled outside of the CRTM, or?
You need the source terms, and then you can figure out whatever else.
Right. Yeah, the sensor scan angle and the sensor zenith angle—they're part of a
table
data type in the CRTM that's input into the CRTM.
The CRTM knows about that stuff.
It's input into the.
Oh, okay. CRTM. You have to put tables in it.
CRTM needed
us. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, right. Well, one way or another, it's in a table somewhere.
Yeah.
So, but if we use existing instrument, CRTM, there is a table already exists, right?
No. I think whatever instrument you use, you have to put that information in. Sounds like
yeah.
It's in other words, CRTM is sort of general, and then you have to give it parameters that make it specific.
CRTM is just really a transcoder.
Yeah. So.
Is a local dimension angle always changes with the time?
Well, the Earth is turning, the satellite's going like this and moving.
Every spot's kind of having a different local zenith angle.
Okay.
Right?
I think so. Well, the satellite, the relationship of the satellite to the Earth is always changing.
Right.
And
the scan, too, I mean, you're going to have, for each scan line, you've got 50 points. Each one of those has got a different viewing angle as well, so you're seeing
at any given point in time.
Even if the satellite stayed in the same place relative to the Earth, you still have looking back and forth or looking at different angles at the different spots it's actually looking at. I think there's one looks straight, a couple that looks pretty much straight down. Then there's the limbs.
Oh, okay.
So having So you can you handle CRTM, right? You can.
Obviously, but at a place time, I can use like a SATA something to do the calculation, to the simulation. Or if you need a CRTM, I can transfer to the CRTM. And even I can use like a SATA or something like that. And there we can use like a CRTM. We can just compare the result, find the difference.
Yeah, but he's not going to simulate the data. He's just coming here.
No, but GSI will effectively do that.
But the reason we want to use CRTM is it's called used by GSI, and we want to produce the
data. I can generate with my code very quickly to generate the data. If I transfer to the CRTM. That means I have to change something, maybe spend a little bit more time.
Oh, those are yours.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's two issues we're talking about here. One is developing the best way to simulate realistic soundings. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's a research project, no doubt. And it involves all kinds of research. But in terms of spinning a set of radiances up that are reasonable, that we could actually start doing assimilation experiments with, that are not too good and not too bad, and not too many and not too few, then we have to think how to make those estimates. Yeah. And I think our most important thing right now is how to think about making those kind of estimated data sets that have about the same number of individual brightness temperatures and in the right wavelengths that comparable to the real world but taken from this nature run. Okay, and I mean one possibility is similar to what we did with the experiments we did with O minus A. The GSI and on the history tapes, there is every day, every synoptic time, there's a set of diagnostic information from, I don't know if it's from GSI or SSI, but anyway, we have it for a year, that has every footprint and every channel that was actually used from every satellite. And we could just use that pattern, for May to October. We could just use that pattern that was actually used already.
Yeah.
And generate clear soundings. That's
so
a possibility.
So wherever it was used in October 3rd, we just produce clear sound.
Whatever channels in whatever satellites, past quality control, at whatever scan points, whatever actual brightness temperatures are actually used in the assimilation, in the operation. For that period. We could just use those. Use that as a mask. And just use that data that we could simulate all the data, let's say, at clear.
For the quick test.
And then just apply this mask that masks out everything that wasn't used in the operations.
So the storm location of the storm is different. Some of the data might
be. Yeah, but the satellite locations are all the same. It doesn't matter where the storms are.
Yeah.
But what matters is, you know, there may be clouds in the nature run, not in the real world. But I mean, in some ways, it's a moot point.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, but we're not trying to be perfect here. We're just trying to be close. We're just trying to be reasonable. We're just trying to get the numbers about right, really.
So my suggestion was to just to use total cloud cover is less than 5% or something, just to produce clear sky.
Yeah, but you don't get the distribution in channels then. You don't get the right distribution in channels because if you looked at that little graph I sent you, some channels, you know, use a percent of the data. Some channels use 10% of the data.
Yeah.
And it depends on where they're looking and where the clouds are that influence that.
So that's...
And just using a bulk number for cloud cover is not going to get you that. That's why Ron's method is much more complicated. He's, for every channel, he's saying, okay, is there clouds that affect this channel? Mm-hmm. And how much? Yeah. And so if it's... 50% cloud cover, then only 50% of the time am I going to let that sounding through at that channel. See?
So if you use that ratio between cloudy radiance and clear sky radiance, how does he interpret that one to cloud cover?
We're talking about just producing clear sky soundings. We're ignoring clouds, and we're using a cloud mask, basically, provided by the GSI in the form of the actual satellite diagnostics that came out of the operation. Okay. And that gives us the exact same channels on the exact same satellites and instruments in our OSSI that were used in the real world. It's not perfect because in the real world if the nature run was actual, you know, there would be clouds in places that would be different than in the real world, so that different channels would actually get through in the nature run if we really included the effects of those clouds on those particular channels. But that's a much bigger problem. That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
It's if we want to run into simulation sometime soon, it seems like a reasonable place to start to use a template from the real world as a starting point. And there's going to be some inconsistencies kind of in an esoteric point of view, but from a more practical point of view, you'll have the exact same number of soundings and channels that get assembled.
How do you get that template? It's
on the history tapes.
Oh, okay.
It's called RADSTAT.
Yeah, it's in the RADSTAT files. You just pull out.
Kind of a binary, it's almost like an ASCII file. It just has...
It's not a DIAG file. Is that... No, not in the DIAG file.
Well, it's a DIAG file. That's what they call it.
It's wrapped up in that file.
RADSTAT is what? A combination of guess and analysis? Diagnostic file, something like
but
that.
But the DIAG file for each channel, each location, every single point?
Every channel, every
channel. That's why it's so huge.
They have the whole orbit for that 6 hours that went in. So wherever the satellite was, you'll see the map of those channels that were used.
Okay.
Those plots came from that file.
This one?
That's just, that's an average over a month.
Yeah.
Is this really for January 1979?
Absolutely.
For the reanalysis?
Yeah. We just reanalyzed 30 years. The person who makes these plots is so far behind that she's only gotten to 79 so far.
January 79.
I mean, we've assimilated all 30 years, and they're just making plots in 79 now, so.
Can you explain these figures?
Yeah, could you explain this figure?
It's just a number of soundings.
Yeah, the first
on the top
one
that passed the quality control
on
average at every synoptic time in January 1979.
Okay.
Okay.
This includes their thinning box. That's why there's only 7,000 max.
Includes what?
The thinning.
Thinning.
The thinning box, okay. Right. This is the one that was in the thinning box that was chosen, okay? This isn't a full everything.
Yes.
This is just one in 180 kilometers, okay?
How many, what's the thinning box is about 9 footprints?
No.
Uh-huh.
The thinning box is different for each satellite type, and for the IR it's 180 kilometers. I believe for the AMSU it's 145 kilometers.
Yeah.
Okay, and what happens is the Russ goes in and he finds the one that he thinks is the best in that 180 kilometers, regardless if it's in a corner or in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And that's what goes through then into the simulation system.
Okay.
It's not the full satellite data.
So when you do this, the thing is
Well, no, but
already?
It's the full set that was used, that was assimilated.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's what we're interested
right.
in.
Okay, but it's not every footprint.
I understand.
It's
I understand what you're saying. Some of them have been already arbitrarily or somewhat arbitrarily removed ahead of time.
Rejected.
So it's the one that fits into the box best.
Right.
So that thinning box, the radius is 100 or 140 that kilometer. So it's much bigger than 60 kilometer used by ton.
Well,
for GOES, I don't know what GOES may be
different. Sensors is different.
Well,
for the
IR, it's basically 180, and then I'd say for the microwave, it's about 145. I'd have to go look.
It's in a script,
yes.
Right?
And it is adjustable. It's not like it's fixed number. It is adjustable.
Yeah.
But we're trying to mimic operations.
The regional model runs at a higher rate.
Okay. But that shows, though, that, you know, well, there's two issues here. One is you can see the different distribution by channel.
Right.
And then the other thing is in terms of what percent of the data is actually used. This is a little misleading because the data has already been thinned.
Yeah.
The thinning, can you give a guess how what percent of the data is thinned out?
Oh my gosh.
If it's 180 kilometers, there's probably, you start with what, 10 soundings or something, or 10 or 20,
yeah, you're gonna,
50 or something?
You're going to probably be in a box of 10 by 10. That would give you like an 18-kilometer footprint.
Right.
10 by 10.
Okay.
So that's, you'd be using one of 100.
So in other words, this represents about a percent of the data.
1%.
Of the total data.
So is that already considered a cloud contaminated information?
No, it doesn't necessarily.
Cloud contaminated thinning.
Yeah, I mean a whole thinning box could be covered with clouds.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. And for the air, if I don't thin, means I put thinning box to 1 kilometer or something, then everything gets in.
Airs is there's 9 airs in an AMSU footprint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then AS use 100 kilometers. If I reduce to 1 kilometer, number of data is 10 times.
That's
increased.
A little bit. Let's see, is that higher than AIRS? Let's see, 1 kilometer.
So if I put
a little bit.
It's thin. If I put thin, I think for that 1 kilometer, all the data gets in.
Yes.
Then that will include the data size 10 times, not 100 times.
Well, see, the AIRS footprint is about 14 kilometers.
Yeah.
So there's going to be, what, 12 by 12 or something like that in a thinning box.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not every... I don't know how to say this right. The thinning box is set at 180 kilometers, okay,
yeah.
Regardless of the satellite resolution.
Right, right.
Okay, so how many spots are in that is going to depend on your satellite resolution.
Yeah.
If your satellite's 18 kilometers, then you're going to have 10 by 10. If your satellite resolution is 10, then you're going to have 18 by 18.
Now, I just remembered, for instance, for HERS, this Tyrosin HERS, and for most HERS too, there's about 180,000 footprints per 6 hours. Okay? And so I guess we can say that, for instance, if there's 7,000 max in these, then that's then the thinning, assuming that it uses almost all the data, I don't know, but that isn't thinned out in the maximum counts.
Well, those are stratospheric channels, and those are not affected by clouds. So
okay,
those typically goes through.
Okay, so the 7,000 is probably the 7,000 over 170,000 is probably the percent that gets thin.
Right.
Okay.
All
right.
Real close. And channels 1, 2, and 3 in the HERS are mostly stratospheric channels. So they will not see the clouds. And so they typically get through. You get down into 6, 7, 8, 9, those are surface channels. Mm-hmm. They have surface components, and then they get thinned out.
So you get about 2,000 of those. And that amounts to, well, that's the thinned out section. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say how many total cloud effects you have, because some of them are thinned out.
Yeah,
and they try to pick the clearer ones, so that number is going to be inflated.
Those are probably the clearest of the ones.
They try to find the clearest
in the whole
ones
sample.
In the thinning parts,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It looks like 1/4, I guess.
Do we always use a single box as 180 kilometers?
Well, 1/4. Yeah, right. 1/4.
If you look at GSI script, you can tell it's in 140 or 180.
Yeah, it's about a quarter of a quarter. Because the seventh, thinning is about a quarter the total.
If you assume that it's proportional if you go to the larger amount.
Yeah, well, 7,000 is about a quarter of 170,000.
Right.
Seven is about a quarter of 170,000.
Right.
Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Sorry, 24, not a quarter.
That's hot. The data you give us, that's only 3 hours.
No, 6 hours.
From 21Z to 00Z.
Well, it's 6 hours of data. Now, if there's no data after midnight, then there's no data after midnight. But and a lot of times in operations, in the operational dumps, you won't get data after midnight because it didn't come in yet.
Yeah.
You get late. You get the dump happens at T plus 9 or something, and sometimes the satellites aren't. The satellites at T plus 2 and T plus 3 aren't in yet.
Oh, okay.
They haven't made it into the database yet.
So we should estimate the total HERS data, and the footprint is about 100.
Well, I count them. It's about 170,000 on average, in general, for HERS 2. And it fluctuates a little bit, but it's roughly in that ballpark for the full set.
Also, could you explain that table to?
This is just I took the total cloud cover. This is something Michiko wanted to look at.
Yeah.
Wanted to look at total cloud cover as an indicator of where a footprint might be cloudy. All right, so I just looked through the set of data for October 1st, 0Z. Set of HERS data. Doesn't matter, but HERS data is what I looked at. And HERS 2 data actually, and I just binned the counts by in bins a five percent cloud cover.
Gotcha.
Right. Okay.
So if the footprint is within a box that has 5% cloud cover.
That's right. If the interpolated value actually of the cloud cover.
Okay.
Is 5%. It goes in the 5% bin. And the 5% bin goes from 2.5% to 7.5%.
Okay. So interpolated, you mean from the grid to the footprint?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I can understand.
In space and time. So,
so
trilinear or whatever.
So this method has problem because the stratospheric channel, even if total cloud cover is 100%, we can still get to you.
Yeah.
Can still
on the other hand, like channel 1 they never use, but channel 2 they do use.
Yeah, okay.
Right, that's where the problem comes in.
Yes, okay. I understand. So your suggestion, quickest way is use the
existing template is the quickest way to get a very reasonable sample.
Uh-huh.
It's not perfect,
but
it's reasonable. It's kind of like the same problem we had with O minus A.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. So you take the interpolated amount of cloud from this grid to the footprint, and then you look at how much of the total data actually gets into the...
Well, that's one thing we were thinking of doing. But total cloud cover is a heavy hammer, because it doesn't, you know, what do you do with the stratospheric channels?
Yeah.
Are,
even if total cloud cover is 100%, we can still use
stratospheric channels.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if we were going to use cloud cover, like Ron was talking about, we'd probably have to use high, middle, low cloud.
Yeah.
And then just identify which channels are affected by which.
Yeah.
And then maybe apply some probability based on the cloud cover, the percentage, because that's sort of a probability of a cloud there. Apply a probabilistic kind of method to decide which ones we think are clear. That's what Ron wants to do, and it's pretty simple, but it's not, it's not a one-day job. A one-day job, though, what we're talking about is being a one-day job to get a reasonable sample to run an OSDI, to actually use an OSDI and sort of believe the results or, you know, have some confidence that they're realistic, is to just take the template from the stat file. We have every footprint, every channel accounted for in the stat file, including, I think, the ones that are thinned out. So, and we just apply that as a mask, okay, and say, okay, we're only going to simulate. We can't tell which soundings are really cloudy and which aren't, because we're just going to generate, let's say, a whole set of clear soundings. We're just going to assume all the soundings are clear sky, and we're going to, you know, generate brightness temperatures based on that assumption, but then we're going to put this mask over it from the stat file from operations and say, well, we're only going to simulate the ones that get through the mask.
So that mask is a long-time average?
No. It's a day-to-day exact account.
It's a cycle. There's four of them a day.
Yeah, it's 6 hours of set of data, right. And so it accounts for which ones were assimilated in operations from every satellite.
So you can just produce 91 dB, 91 L, for this the data which
was
acquired.
Well, I mean, you know, one channel or 20 channels or 100 channels, you need the whole profile.
Yeah.
But, so I need a footprint everywhere there's a channel.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to end up with a file that's probably as... Well, except for the thinning. I won't have to produce anything for the thin data, I guess. The thin data have no channels that pass the quality control, right?
Right.
So I won't make any profiles for any soundings, any footprints that were thinned out.
Yeah, that's
okay,
right.
So that's a big reduction right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 1/24th.
Yeah.
So I'll have 1/24th of the footprints, profiles. Information for 1/24th of the footprints, you know, for May to October, and within those, within that set, there'll be specific channels that I know either were used or weren't used somehow or another. I have to apply that. I'll probably make a set of profiles that represent any footprint that was used at all, and then apply the channel mask after the brightness temperatures are created.
Yeah.
In other words, we'll make complete, all the channels we will simulate for each of those soundings. And then I'll apply the mask a second time to those to get rid of the channels that actually were thrown out by the quality control. So there'll be two thinnings, one ahead of time, the thinning ahead of time, channel masking afterwards. And then we get the exact in numbers, time, in places, you know, and times and channels. We'll get the exact set that was used in operations.
Okay.
So you use the
You are going to use the we simulate our readings at October 1st, 2005. Then you are going to find in the operational the cloud mask at that time.
Yeah.
Okay. For
it's actually a channel mask. It masks every channel that was used and assimilated for any reason, you know, I won't use any channel that was removed for any reason, not just clouds.
Yeah, I mean, these two atmospheric is totally different.
Yeah. But for the quick estimate.
Well, we know that the ones that were used First of all, well, we know the ones that were used probably were you know, fairly clear, or they were acceptable for some reason or another.
Yeah.
I mean, we still have problems with MSU. I don't know what the difference. I don't know what a clear sky MSU sounding looks like versus a cloudy. Does the clouds make a difference in the MSU sounding?
The AMSUs, unless you've got really thick clouds, I don't think it does.
It does.
You're
going to
see through the thinner ones.
So
your numbers there should be almost all of them, mm-hmm. all the time.
So probably for MSU, we have to generate cloudy radiance.
No. I think Tim was saying we don't. We can. Clear sky is. Looks like a cloudy body.
That's the purpose behind the microwave is that it is not affected by clouds.
Yeah.
Okay. So unless it's raining or something else, then it's fine.
Raining, it's affected by rain. Mm-hmm. So then we'll get into the contradiction of, you know, in the real world it was raining here, in the nature run it wasn't. Although the nature run is so underspecified, I mean.
And you'll have that in your RadSat file too, which mm-hmm. ones the AMSUs and so mm-hmm. on made it through the system. You can thin out a little bit of
absolutely.
That too if you
absolutely.
Wanted to.
Yeah.
So it might be QC'd out in a GSI, or if it's raining, but it's to give the clear sky radiance, maybe still GSI might use it. GSI will use it, right?
If it's cloudy, yes.
It depends on how they detect rain.
Yeah. Right. That's difficult. But a lot of times, too, it's a brightness temperature difference. How close is it to the background and its neighbors? And there's various checks in there for that.
We might get some data over the rain. But
Well,
in a simulated case, it won't matter because you won't be putting that precipitation into that radiance that you're building.
Yeah.
It'll be clear.
The problem with the rain is that it interferes, right, with the sensing.
Right.
It's not that
it's an attenuation of the radiance.
Right. And that a clear sky sounding, if you could take it in the rain, would actually be correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as long as you eliminate enough of them, you're okay. So for microwave, it's actually not bad, it seems like. For microwave, it's ideal, practically, as a comparison with the real world, with operations. The IR is a little more problematic because in the real world, where there's clouds, it's not going to get through. And what difference does it make if you actually had soundings in those cloudy areas? That's what we, you know, that's the only difference. It's a small difference. Assimilating data, let's say, in our OSSI,
yeah.
In assimilating IR data, mm-hmm. all right, as good information in cloudy areas. Okay, yeah. I don't know how that's going to skew our comparison with the real world.
Well, that will give something optimistic. Result?
Well, remember, for every cloudy area that we actually have soundings from the real world,
yeah.
there's a clear area we don't.
Yeah.
I mean, so that if you're saying optimism on one side, pessimism on the other,
yeah.
do they balance or what? Or is there some other, you know, bad feedback that would cause? In other words, is the IR, clear sky sounding, in a cloudy area? Is that going to give a bad analysis somehow?
It shouldn't, because the radiance itself would be contaminated by the cloud. But the temperature profile is the temperature profile. Okay.
Yeah. Well, remember, we're generating just clear sky
right.
simulation.
Right.
So that would should be okay. It shouldn't harm the analysis
right.
to be able to assimilate real a clear sky sounding in a cloudy area just because we did this trick.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like it might have not even be bad.
So I think it may be optimistic, but it won't harm.
But there will be places that where a clear sky, where there should be soundings, where there won't be, mm-hmm. by the same token. Yeah?
Yeah.
It's just because the clouds are different in the real world. We're seeing cloud. We're we have a set of soundings, a pattern of soundings, that's made from clouds in the real world, from operational runs, and we're applying them to this nature run world, where the clouds are different. So if we get pessimistic, then it's almost random where those, you know, if the assimilation of clear soundings in cloudy areas helps, let's say makes optimistic forecast skills because, you know, you didn't have it in the real world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the unobserved area, the clear area that didn't have soundings because there was clouds in the real world,
right.
I mean, in some sense it balances it out. And it's a random situation whether which area was more important to the assimilation.
Right.
Sometimes you can get an area that's very important to see, and you can't see it because there's clouds. And so you get a bad forecast. Whereas if you could see it, you get a better forecast. But it seems to me that in this case, looking at the different cloud patterns between the real world and nature, and that would have to be a random situation.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, if you have an area that's always cloudy, it's going to be cloudy in the nature run too.
Yeah, if we can say that.
If the nature run's any good. Yeah.
Yeah, if we can say the research is going on, we can do this.
Yeah. We can do this. And then the research is going to have to beat the results.
You will, Rupa, you are guaranteed the quality, upcoming quality.
Yes, but I understand part of yours, what you say, but if you use the template used in the real simulation, so that's a similar way as what you did before.
Well, it's exactly identical to what we do with all the other OBS. We just take the aircraft patterns and satellite wind patterns and everything else from operations.
Okay. Yeah, there's the second question I want to ask you. Yeah, I actually mail you some histogram. I could not understand why. Nature run, it's always have a high cloud. Always, every single point. So I saw that you have some similar comments. You said very cloudy. The nature run is very cloudy. So let me ask you: did you use a reduced Gaussian grid, or did you use the?
No, I used the high resolution, T511 reduced Gaussian grid. Yes.
What I'm trying to say is, you know, the reduced Gaussian grid has about 380 some grid point. But if you use a grid to control, it creates latitude, regular latitude, longitude. So did you use the second part?
No, I didn't use grid to control. I just wrote my own code to.
So
I used GribX to reconstruct, the reduced grid values.
So you could.
And then I just interpolated off the reduced grid.
That one. So I just last night I thought maybe this one I used.
It shouldn't matter.
It's a matter. My understanding is a matter because in the grid to control according Michiko, it's really actually not do the interpolation. It's more like to assign the.
The nearest neighbor.
If it's nearest neighbor, it's
going to
be different then.
Yeah, I said.
But anyway, the cloud is too suspicious. That's my conclusion. It's too much cloud in the nature run, particularly in the higher cloud cover.
Well, this total cloud cover, I guess, includes all high, medium.
Yeah, yours is. But what I did is separate.
You looked at it. You separated.
Separate, and still, I cannot understand, so that's why I ask you, did you use
I don't know much about cloud.
Reduced, or did you use the second step? Because I use the second step, so I needed to.
You mean
check.
you got cloudier results than these?
Very cloud. If you look at this is a histogram. You can see at.
It's a histogram.
Sorry,
I
should have printed out.
Yeah.
Okay, these are only satellite.
Yes. No, this is a nature run.
These are only satellite. These are the nature run at satellite.
Yes, I understand.
Okay.
Yeah, but we should have some
similarity. It's not the whole world because it's only 6 hours a day.
I understand.
Sections.
You are just a part, a low part.
Well, no. This is the total. but it's sections of the world. It's not
the
world.
What I mean is when I plot your Earth location, it's really the most of a region. The footprint is on the southern hemisphere.
Maybe I
should the data I got from you.
No.
Yes.
No, it's global.
Yes, but most of that time is...
it should be about at least three orbits.
Yes, three orbits.
Okay, so that's equal data, northern, southern.
Yeah, you're right. I take my words, But anyway, so that's why if we use, we want to calibrate, it's a bigger, I don't know, I mean, I saw.
Well, I mean, there may be a way to physically, to use the clouds in the nature run to generate a realistic set of cloud affected soundings, but we have to show that.
Okay.
And I think this is a good standard to have to show it
again. Yeah, yeah. So what this is a histogram. I have a divide the whole, whole global into 16 latitude beams. So that at each latitude beam, this is based on the nature run data, that's a model, free run from EC data. So this resolution is the triangle truncation, what's called the T511. So after each latitude band, and I computed the cloud histogram based on the interval is point 0.1. He did is 0.05. I did is from 0.00 cloud, and then 0.00 to 0.1, and then up to 1, because the cloud fraction is from 0 to 1. So then I plot those. This,
20 intervals, right? 20 intervals.
My case is only 11, because the interval is 0.1.
Oh, yours is 0.1.
Yeah.
0.1 degree. 0.1, whatever. 10%. Every 10%.
Every 10%, but 0 is one individual group.
Okay.
So any point with no
right,
cloud,
and clear is...
Yeah, it will be 1. So that's why I come up.
Well, there should be a lot less of them, right? Less of them. Because it's only a single point rather than 10 points. I mean, you're...
No, I have a beam.
But your 10%, does it include 5% to 15%?
No, only from 0 and 0 to 10%, 10 to 20%.
Oh.
That way. So that's a... So what's the point here is the 16...
Okay, every 10% centered every 5. Every at 5, 15, 25, 35. Yeah, centered on the 5.
You can consider that, but one...
Well, the center of each bin is at 5.
Yes. Yeah. So what I did is I just take two...
That'll flip
no,
around.
No, it's from south to north.
So the bottom is south.
Oh, I see. No reason to, I guess.
Yeah, this is the right orientation.
I see. All right, so those are your bins.
These are my bins on the horizontal axis. As I said, I take the one there is misleading, but the one means the no cloud. Then two is from no clouds to 10%. Then each 10% is one group, and then up to the 100%. So the 16 from south to north is from the south pole to the north pole. So each latitude beam, including about 11 degree, it's in the nature grid is about 32.
So this
grade
is for 1 hour.
This is a particular at 12 day, at one that's a 2000. To bottom one is
12
day.
Bottom, so it's only reports in 1 hour.
Let's say 3 hour in the nature run. Yeah. They report. For 3 hours.
Nature run at 12Z, what had cloud and what didn't.
Yeah.
Well, it's...
They report as a three.
This is just big points at what? 12 at 12Z. Every point is a valid time. It's not a range of times.
Is this the instant value or three 3 hour
cloud
average.
Cover, no, it's an instant value.
I think
instant
so.
Value.
Yeah.
Okay, this is based on instant value.
And this is the global. This is global.
Global. I cut the whole from South Pole to North Pole, each 11 grid latitude as a one latitude beam. So they are.
Is this
16
the latitudes here? Or?
Beam. Yes, that's
this
latitude
is,
beam.
X
is the interval
is the
of the cloud.
16.
So I'm sorry, usually we histogram is that, but it's hard for me to.
Oh no, that's perfectly okay.
So
no,
I just
need
use
to know what it is.
So yeah. 0 to 11 is the bin, or the, those are the bins.
B is 1 to
yeah.
16.
These are the bins, right? Mm-hmm.
No, no, no. B is up. Oh, when you say bin, it's a cloud bin.
The
yes.
cloud bin is on
yeah.
the X.
Cloud bin
is
on the X.
This is 10%, 20%,
yes.
30%.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is latitude, like
bin.
this
from
is the South Pole.
South
bin.
Pole
south
to the North
Pole.
And to
how
North Pole.
Many are there, 16 or 15?
16 bin.
So
latitude
180 divided by 16.
11 point some degree.
I see.
So each bin is 11 point something.
Okay.
And including in nature one, it is 32 grid in Gaussian grid. That's the nature run, the model from EC that's including 32
yeah.
you
well,
know,
why
grid.
You have the cloud percentage above 100?
Yeah, over
where
here.
It's 11, 12.
Oh, I did not have EC. That's
it's not 100. See, you see the
yeah.
same thing here.
Yes.
You see
similar.
Exactly the same thing
similar.
Here.
Yours
where you
is
have.
I have a
everywhere, all the bins up to 100%
yes.
are in single digits. And then all of a sudden at 100% it jumps up to 31.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
31% of
yeah.
the total.
Yeah, we got a similar
is 100% cloud cover.
Yeah. So there's a high cloud fraction. You see the first one that I never understand is look at the bin one. That means no cloud. That means there's a no point has no higher cloud. They always have a high cloud.
Isn't
but
it between 0 and 5? I mean, it's
no,
just small.
Zero, that's a second one. Second mm-hmm. one, look at the two. Second.
You're saying this is 0?
Yes, that's
uh-oh.
0.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks
yes.
to me like it's between 0
no,
and
no.
5.
I also print out the number.
You print the number.
And then, because the number there is so
well, I get
things,
in my
so
list.
I
have about the same number of
UR
in the zero bin.
Total cloud.
Well, yeah, but
total cloud does not necessarily.
Well, so what's it saying is that there's no exact zero. You're
yeah.
looking at only exact zero.
Exactly. I
so there could, it could be
cloud.
It could be 0001 and it wouldn't show up there.
It is possible.
Okay.
No, should be the truncation digit that should be 0. 0000001. That's a 7 digit is a truncation number.
Well, then 0001 would not show up in that bin.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm saying, you know, it's just like your values you're
oh,
deriving
okay.
out of
yeah,
your,
maybe I should
your interpolator are all a little
oh,
bigger
okay.
than 0. Not
okay.
very.
I see.
Not, you
I
know.
See your point.
Yeah.
yeah. So maybe I should change that. You're right.
Well, yeah, you should have equal bins. You should have
yeah.
a zero bin that goes to.
Okay.
You know.
0.1.
Whatever. Maybe
well,
maybe
0.5.
Maybe,
yeah.
maybe 0.05.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
It shouldn't be just exact zero.
Yeah, yeah, you're
that's
right.
That's a singularity.
Yeah, maybe that's
a singularity in your
but
world.
But if you look at second picture,
yeah.
okay, go to the second picture. This is a high cloud. Yeah, I will change that. But if you look at the second picture, that's a middle cloud, that's the same thing. You see the value there. It's a, for example, at the south part, that's a yellow. So that's a, there are some values.
So and middle cloud is exact zero somewhere.
Exactly. That's the same things, same method, but work on the, I mean, with the middle cloud, high cloud, and the low cloud. The third one is a low cloud.
There is a zero somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, that's there, zero.
And now let me just look at this. You're uh-huh. saying in this bin, it looks like.
No, if you want to get one, you should go horizontally. You do horizontally some of that.
Well, no,
that's
I mean this is the bin of like very small cloud
yes,
fractions.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But and very small cloud fraction, the percentage, right, of what grid points. In, I mean, what
percentage
is this?
Percentage you have 10.
Is this percentage of grid points in the in the region?
Yeah.
This is.
Yes.
So, okay.
So horizontally, you should come out.
All right.
One,
so in the 100. Near, this is near the pole.
Yes.
But this is kind of at the equator.
At the 8.
So, and you're saying there's 30% have this zero value. Okay.
And if you look at the.
See, I don't see that. That's what I don't see in here.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
I don't know. Of course, I mean, why shouldn't I? This is total. Yeah. Why wouldn't it include middle?
I should not say. Of course, I should say not necessary.
In that regard, these differ.
Yeah,
in
not
that
necessary because your thing is total cloud.
It should include
even
middle.
Not equal to the sum of each three individual cloud.
It's not the sum. It's kind of the union or the overlap or something.
Yeah,
it's not the sum.
Yeah. So not necessary to see this, but I can double. Then this is the middle cloud. So you see the cloud distribution is very not uniform. For example, within the interval from 20% to 70%.
Oh, no, that's okay. It doesn't disagree now that I think about it. You're right. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. You can have none in the middle.
Yeah. I see.
And as long as you have some at the top, it'll show up here.
Yeah, that's why I say not necessary, but there are something showed similar.
Right.
So the third picture is a low cloud.
So this
is a low cloud. Again, the model more favor to some cloud. You see, model more likely to give some either very low value, the cloud fraction, or either higher. But in the middle, it's a purple one means the model usually do not generate that cloud fraction. So the upper one and the bottom one is two different time. One is the beginning, closer to the beginning of the nature run, that's June. And the top one is almost at the end of the nature run. The nature run has a spin up and
they look about the same, though.
Yeah,
it looks similar. So that's why Ron is happy about this. So we can have come out some simple function, which we will verify based on the statistics, not based on the each individual time. Where later those probability function will be compared based on the statistical properties. So that's the one. But there's one thing I needed to be careful, because the data I used actually not reduced one. It's used the grip to control. It's already regular one, so I need to go back.
You used grads to do the
Do
the interpolation and everything?
Use a grip control, that's the
Right. I'm not sure what grads does with that.
Grip to control, because I in the last meeting summary I sent you, there are two there are option for the linear interpolation, but you have to grab the beta version from
beta.
I used a beta version. So you have to use beta version and because the current version doesn't work for the European.
I see. You mean it has to change the reduced grid to a regular grid?
Yes. In the old
before you can use the sums and the averages.
So,
That's why I check with you. Now, by the way, I found another thing. You only look at the hers, and I only look at her location.
I know, but they're sort of evenly spaced around.
But anyway, I will go back to redo this based on the original reduced Gaussian grid data, rather than
get almost the same thing I got. If you combined your three pictures and in such a way that it reflected the information correctly, in other words, you would take the minimum values, I guess, in every case, you'd get something like this.
I think this is okay, but you shouldn't use linear maybe. You don't need to. I think it's okay. Just as far as you weighted for latitude, weighted latitude area.
This is not an area. Area weighted. All we need to do is count how this point is cloud yeah. only content about the grid boxes. So that's why I said I should use nature reduced Gaussian data.
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh, okay. So, it, one thing. So, do we agree to use Jacques filtering for?
Let's call it Russ's.
Russ's
filtering.
Russ's filtering. You give everybody.
he probably did the quality control too.
Observation.
Yeah.
Real QC mark. And what he does is he generates the 91 level profile to somewhere which is used by real analysis. That will reduce the amount of data to at least 224 or more
by down to a quarter of its original size. So
yeah. Quarter.
Did I say a quarter?
You said a quarter.
Yeah. No, it's 1/24.
1/24, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was about a 5%.
5%.
That's a 5%.
So 4%. So that to speed up the work, because
what does this filter do? Hmm? How is it filter out of the data?
Because
okay, there are two things that they do, and we've had this explained to us by the experts. There's a box, 180 kilometers.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, you heard that. So yeah. That's the basic thing.
Okay.
So for hers. There's evidently 24 footprints in that box.
Okay.
And only one, the best one, in front by some criteria,
okay.
is picked out.
So for those data.
Okay, and then there's a second on top of that. That gets whole soundings.
Mm-hmm.
That gets a set of whole soundings,
yeah, yeah.
including every channel. And then there's a quality control that's done that crosses out some subset of those channels based on a comparison with the first guess, I guess. And then, so that's the final subset of data that goes and is actually analyzed. And that, for hers, that would remove cloud contamination, probably.
Are you going to do the same thing for the ghost data?
Yeah.
So, where did
the ghost, the ghost sounder, we use, and I think the one by one, was the 1x1 degree
that was just brought in this year.
This year, so we have 5x5.
You're going to have the 5x5, but I think they were also subject to the thinning box.
Right.
So it shouldn't matter. You're only going to get the one profile in, you know, 100 kilometers, 180 kilometers.
Yeah, right, right.
In that case, too.
And so the 5x5 is already a 1/25 reduction anyway, right?
Right.
So, yeah, that's 5 footprints by 5 footprints averaged. And then those are thin.
Right. Because the 5x5 is going to be about 50 kilometers.
It's still thin, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then that,
yeah.
if you map that onto the 180 kilometers, you're still thinning.
Yeah. Right. And then there's still quality control.
Right.
What is it, 13 channels? Or I forget how many channels.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 11, 12.
No, no, it's 18. It's 18 channels.
It's a total of 18.
Sounders,
but there's only
a
short wave are used.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So
right.
From 15 on are all gone. And
yeah. Okay.
You know, channel one is not used.
Oh, so it's.
It's a
just
it's a HERS light.
Yeah. HERS light.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. HERS light. Right.
So you pick the point. You pick the channel.
So in other words, you know, it'll be the same thing. It'll just be a reduced number of footprints.
Okay.
And
then you just create the clear or whatever kind of sounders you want to create.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I create two sets. One is cloudy, just like it is. Then cloud. Another set is a clear sky.
Yeah, yeah. And
that
clear
will
sky.
Aid research. That will aid research.
Yeah,
yeah, and also.
Then after that, when I give you this reading data, then you apply the mask.
That's right.
Right.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
Right.
The second.
Exactly. And I was telling Haibing before you came in, he mentioned about what do we do to go to buffer. Well, if I just get back from you another binary file that has the location information with the rate with the brightness temperatures.
Okay.
See what I mean? That's all I need.
Yes. Okay. Binary file, yeah.
Yeah. So, and just, you know, you got the nature run stuff and the one you got, and then you can just, the same sort of deal. I need to know where it is, when it is,
right.
any geometry that you put in,
right.
that you derive, and then the brightness temperature. Right.
So, you have to just generate all the channel. The first thing to use is probably clear sky radiance first. Then probably you don't have to do the cloudy, but for your interest, we can do it.
Well, the research should. I mean, we need the research too.
Yeah.
We need two things. We need a set of soundings to get started with, and we also need data for research.
Yeah, you can compare. I see. Yeah, you can compare the clear. Use the method you are talking then another just try is cloudy data.
Yeah. So to be going, we just need clear. Then Rumfa and Ron is going to generate both clear and cloudy and study the cloud clearing algorithm. But you can also.
Yeah, the great thing is you'll have with this set that we're going to produce from the operational maps, you'll have targets.
Yeah, true.
You'll be able to do the statistics on those in terms of how many of what channels and where and when and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I just do not understand if the data already seen in before getting into GSI, so the resolution would be different from what the profile you give to us. So then later...
Well, I'm going to make new profiles.
Based on the seen in.
But you see, if we fed a complete set of footprints into the GSI, it would thin them, I believe.
Yeah, and also he has already produced the profile.
But why should I make hundreds of megabytes of data that's going to get thinned out?
Yeah.
That's the only. That's why I'm thinning it ahead of.
That part I actually do not understand. So, in other words, what we are doing, I mean, we're trying to get, you know, the focus on the each footprint, and then later. It won't be accepted by the GSI, or it will be screened.
Well,
so
but the thinning's based on the characteristics of the soundings, so that if you produce really realistic soundings, then they will be thinned realistically.
When you say realistically, you mean based on the nature, wrong?
Well, no, based on how well the soundings that you invented. You know, mimic soundings in the real world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you really are able to, I think for the perfect case, we should start with the full set, and we should realistically simulate soundings that would look a lot like what a satellite would really see in that world.
When you say that word means under the nature-run world.
Nature-run world, yeah.
And this thinning is another thing we have to test.
And then the thinning
thing,
would
no?
treat those exactly or very similarly to the way it treats the real one.
Yeah.
And pick kind of the same sort of soundings to assimilate them. The thinning is going to produce the same number of soundings no matter what they look like, I suppose. Yeah, it's a kind of a brute force.
Yeah, there's so many boxes that you're going to get.
And only one in each comes out.
But what you tried with John DeMarche, did you try the airs without thinning?
You can't, you're going to, first of all, there's not enough memory on the machine to take in all of that air standing.
Blow up the computer.
You know, with the others, the HERS, the AMSs, you can probably cut down the thinning box and get away with it. But with AIRS, we're talking 200 million observations at 8 bits. And then you've got to have the corresponding model information with that. It's just, we're talking
terabytes. Well, even if it fit, it would take an awful long time.
Yeah,
The system itself is incapable of handling it because the only thing it would try to fit then would be AIRS data. Mm-hmm. And all the rest of the obs will really be
sheer weight of numbers.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they have to do something to make everybody play nice.
So when you did with
what he was talking about when I did the full spatial resolution is that I looked at every pixel to try and find the best one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right.
The original data set that came through had only the center spot in every other golf ball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and every other scan line, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or every, yeah.
So I only had one of 18 total fields of view.
Yeah.
And so I went in and I said, that's not good enough. I'm going to look at every field of view and find the best one that I can.
Oh. And is that the 600 channel set that you're working with?
For errors, it's the 281.
The 281?
Yes.
The 281, okay.
Okay.
Because that's only a tenth of the channel.
Yes.
Or so.
That's an order.
Errors actually has 1,000 times more data than errors.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the full resolution.
And it overwhelms the system. You have to thin something out there.
Yeah.
So for theirs, it's kind of like a predefined.
There's 200. Right now, there are 281 channels that are given.
Right.
That were pre-selected, I think, before the missile, the satellite was even launched.
I believe it. Which ones were to be used? And they do the profile from the stratosphere to the surface all the way through the water vapor. They did a pretty decent job of spreading them up.
So, is that okay? Do you think you can proceed?
Yeah, we'll try it because it's not much change, right? It's just to use your data to simulate it. It's
right,
like
right.
Scheme now. You just select some data according to your mask.
So
I will try to give you the result as soon as possible. Just try it.
So will you use CRTM or SALT? SALT is easier for you.
SALT. Yeah,
it
might be the best way. I can generate some data. You can play with it, and then maybe I can find
it.
Don't
add bias.
Sure.
So
okay.
Because he added instrumental bias, he knew, but that makes a little bit too difficult to. Maybe.
Well, this
if
is
we
a
have
control
three,
set anyway.
Yeah,
so.
If we have 3 months, we might be able to spin now. But for this time,
yeah, that's the problem.
Try
it takes 3 months
spin.
To spin up to get rid of it.
Yeah, and if we are lucky,
yeah,
we
right,
may not be
right.
able to. The bias correction for the reanalysis for each instrument, they use three months to spin up the bias. But
it took 3 months for the, you know, for the diagnostics to show that the bias was captured.
Yeah, but there are no guarantee that that bias correction is correct. So that's too big task for the beginning effort.
So about
we should be able to show by the same metric that the biases are similar in the simulated data as they are once the bias correction spins up.
Yeah.
In the real case.
But we still have bias between model biases today.
Well, I'm saying we can use the same metric, the same diagnostic, to look at that and see if it's... I'm sorry, my mom.
Yeah. This total bias correction is particular for Hertz, too.
Yeah, for Hertz.
And that's including several...
It's actually sources. Particular for the Tyros N.
It's a specific satellite. The bias corrections are going to be per satellite, per channel. So I don't know which one you did.
Tyros N.
Okay.
Yeah. Hers,
so
Tyros
N. MSU is
in there.
Provided by the people, your side of generated from
the
GSI.
Corrections? Yeah, generated from the GSI. Yeah.
Oh, okay. They talked yesterday when John Durbo was in our GSI meeting in NASA. He talked about they are working on some bias correction that really angle.
Angle dependent.
Yeah, I did not understand.
Well, that's the
scan
angle.
Yeah. So that's nothing about this.
There are five predictors that go into generating the bias correction.
Okay.
And that's the number that comes out.
That's
the
total.
Five predictors. Yeah.
Five predictors. See, I know nothing about it. I'm trying to understand it. So five predictors. Uh huh. This.
Because if you go on the NSET webpage where they have the radiance diagnostics, you'll see where they print out the various predictors in the different for scan angle as well as totals.
What is that webpage? I was looking for that. And I couldn't remember.
I got it bookmarked.
Yeah, bookmarked. Right.
I can't read.
Is it EMC? Stuff. Is it on yeah. EMC? NOAA?
Is that,
NASA?
Is,
NOAA?
You're thinking of a SUD?
No, this is actually SUD. Yeah. I think he's got it. Actually, how I find it when I lose it is I go to the NSEP webpage and I put radiance monitoring in the.
Oh, you search for radiance monitoring? Okay. No problem. I can do that.
So it's not connected from the
NSEP
EMC main page. If EMC, that's the pro, EMC main page and global modeling branch.
It's hard to find. It's hard to follow the links.
So, and GSI page is in a separate. All the global modeling branch.
Can you send us an email or you about that web page?
Yeah, I will look for it. But it's very funny. And Richard Firestone did something.
I'll
funny.
Look it up and send it.
I think it's behind the NSEP firewall. So unless you're into the VPN, you may not get to it.
Okay.
Right. That's probably right.
I don't know anymore. I have problems, which is on which side of what firewall anymore. But you may not be able to see it from that side, unless you use the VPN.
I'm talking about Sue's monitoring, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, Sue has a page, and then there's the operational.
Okay.
Oh, that's an intranet.
Yes,
like
that's right. It's behind a firewall.
Oh.
It could very well be.
Yeah, but what I want to say is John Durbo was in the GSMR meeting. He talked about the ongoing things that he's working just to make a correction about that angle bias or something like that.
There are two bias correction. One is a bias correction, one value. The angle-dependent bias. So these are related. So you can distribute, these are not independent. So we can just do shuffling the bias value between them.
There's a total bias.
Yeah.
I mean, it all adds up to one bad number.
So this is a total bias correction.
I think it is, and there's contributions to the total from different things.
Yeah, but
and to address, to figure out what the bias is, you might want to look at the individual causes.
That also spreads out angular dependent part. I think if you reduce the total bias, the angular dependent part increase or something. That it's not quite independent.
Yeah, he mentioned that mass. Some
it's not independent. Well,
it's not independent.
So there's correlated errors in between.
Yeah, because
the different predictors.
When we do spin up the bias. I fix the bias corrections there for some time. I just update the total bias first, then switch on the bias correction, angular dependent bias correction. So otherwise, all goes angular dependent, it goes wild, something. So I think that maybe John has to improve with something strange.
Yeah, particular surface channel, the bias goes increase with time.
Yeah.
Well, the difficulty is, that you could end up correcting the wrong thing.
Oh, yes.
That's
sure.
Right. We always do that. So that's why bias is a very tough thing to
overfitting
handle.
Is
so we don't need, we can't handle this right now. Maybe later on, we can add bias and see how the bias is handled in OSI. That's interesting thing.
Okay, I have even known the bias.
Yes, sorry. But still, we have model bias,
Yeah, well, that's what you don't want to correct.
Yeah, but we will still get bias correction done.
Yeah, you don't want to correct the model bias.
No.
By thinking it's part of the satellite bias.
Yeah.
Because you're not correcting anything at all.
Yeah. Okay, is that done? Thank you very much, Dave and Jim, for coming. That was very helpful.
I was thinking.